Red Arms, give it your all.
We'll drink the wine till the cup is dry, and kiss the girl so they'll not cry, and toss the dice until we fly, and dance with Jack of the Shadows.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Tales of a Red Arm. I'm your host Justin, and we are jumping into chapter 27, Within the Ways. The entire chapter is from Perrin's point of view, so that'll make this a little easy. It's not terribly long, thankfully. I've had a lot of long ones lately. Could use a small one. But we're still, they had just entered the ways the last time we had kept track of Perrin. And he had kind of jumped line, if you will, ahead of Fa'il, where he was supposed to quote unquote find follow Fa'il and her retinue. And we'll see kind of how that turned out in this chapter. So basically, Perrin and Gaul are kind of staying really far back, and they can basically just see the light is all they can really see. But Gaul's striding alongside Stepper very easily. It's an ideal trait. They can keep up with horses pretty easily. But the ways don't seem to bother Gaul, despite their reputation. It's probably one of those things where, you know, the Aiel culturally are kind of like, why would I fear death kind of thing. I think it's also partially because he doesn't realize that you don't die in the ways due to a lot of things. I mean, you fall off the edge and it's infinite as far as you know. So you probably will die of old age before you died from anything else. Well, I guess probably die from starvation and thirst and all that jazz, because you're getting into that in here. But also, if Machin Shin, obviously, would catch you, then you wouldn't necessarily die. You might just become a puppet. Maybe it's considered death. Maybe it's not considered death. It's not really well known what happens to you. You kind of become a thrall, and that's all they know. But Perrin's listening for the sound of wind rising where no wind ever blew, no wind but Machin Shin, the black wind that ate souls. So, presumably, you just become an empty vessel and there you go. That's it. Now, because of Machin Shin and all the voices, are you dead? You're separated from your body, but you're not necessarily dead as much as tormented. It's like a portable hell, where it's like it kind of floats around the ways and torments the souls on it while also seeking to torment other souls. It's a very interesting concept because I never really thought about it till now, where it's like, is Machin Shin a thing with souls attached to it? Or is it a conglomeration of souls? Because if it's a conglomeration of souls, how did you get the first couple souls to put together in order to make Machin Shin? It's a very strange concept. I know, but we don't know. We don't have any information on it like that I am aware of. If anybody has any information, please let me know. But he doesn't want to get stuck in the ways, that him being Perrin. But then they notice that the faint light ahead stops, and they, you know, hold up on the bridge that they're on. And they got all the pack horses and everything kind of like getting really close to them. And he doesn't want to go closer because he doesn't want to risk basically a repeat of what happened on the first island. I'll just go ahead and read the section about what happened. So enjoy. The pole lantern bobbed as he stepped down from his saddle and led Stepper and the pack horse to the guiding. A tall slab of white stone covered with cursive silver inlays, vaguely reminiscent of vines and leaves, all pitted as if splashed with acid. He could not read it, of course. Loyal had to do that. It was Ogier script, and after a moment he walked around it, studying the island. It was the same as the others he had seen, with a chest-high wall of white stone, simple curves and rounds fitted in an intricate pattern. At intervals, bridges pierced the wall, arching out into the darkness, and railless ramps running up and down with no means of support he could see. There were cracks everywhere, ragged pits and shallow craters, as though the stone were rotting. When the horses moved, there was a grainy sound of stone flaking away beneath their hooves. Gaul peered into the dark with no visible nervousness. But then, he did not know what might be out there. Perrin did. Too well. When Loyal and the others arrived, Fael immediately hopped from her black mare and strode straight to Perrin, eyes intent on his face. He was already regretting making her worry, but she did not look worried at all. He could not have said what her expression was, besides fixed.
"Have you decided to talk to me instead of over my head?"
Her full arm slap made spots dance in front of his eyes.
"What did you mean?" she practically spat. "Charging in here like a wild boar? You have no regard. None."
He took a slow, deep breath.
"I asked you before not to do that."
Her dark, tilted eyes widened as if he had said something infuriating. He was rubbing his cheek when her second slap caught him on the other side, nearly unhinging his jaw. The Aiel were watching interestedly, and Loyal with his ears drooping.
"I told you not to do that," he growled.
Her fist was not very big, but her sudden punch to his short ribs drove most of the air from his lungs, hunching him over sideways, and she drew back her fist again. With a snarl, he seized her by the scruff of her neck, and... That's what happened. And from Perrin's perspective, it was her own fault. He asked her not to hit him, told her. Her own fault. Just surprised she had not tried to pull one of her knives. She seemed to carry as many as Matt. I mean, that's impressive considering how many Matt carries. Matt's like Mad Max, where he just like, if you remember the Thunderdome, when he gets there and they're like, "Yeah, leave your weapons there," and he just pulls out this massive pile of weapons and just shocking everyone around. That's basically what Matt is with knives. And of course, Fael was furious, with Loyal trying to intervene because she could take care of herself, thank you very much, but then furious with Bane and Chiad for not intervening and was taken aback when they said she didn't. They didn't think that she wanted them to interfere in a fight that she had picked. And Bane had said, "When you choose the fight, you must take the consequences, win or lose." But she did not even seem the tiniest angry with him anymore. And that made him nervous. She just stared at him, her dark eyes glistening with unshed tears, but made him feel guilty. But that made him angry, because why should he be guilty? So, he just... Was he supposed to just... take all of the abuse? Was he supposed to just stand there and let her hit him to her heart's content? She sat on her horse Swallow and was there very stiff-backed, refusing to sit gingerly, staring at him with an unreadable expression. It implies the fact that he grabbed her by the scruff of the neck and spanked her. That's basically what it is. And she's not trying to sit gingerly because she doesn't want to think of the... make anyone think that it bothered her. I find this hilarious because it's like she did it to herself. But he's like, her unreadable expression that she stared at him with just made him nervous, and he almost wished he had pulled a knife. Well, almost. Gaul's like, they're moving again, and Perrin comes back to his senses in the present, and was like, the other light is moving, but now it's paused. One of them had noticed that his light was not following yet. Probably Loyal. Fael might not mind if he got lost, but the two Aiel women had tried twice to talk him into walking a little way with them, and he didn't need the slight shake of Gaul's head to refuse. He heeled stepper forward, and carrying the pack horses behind him. The guiding here was more pocked than most he had seen, but he rode past it with only a glance. The light of the other lanterns was already starting down one of the gently sloping ramps, and he followed with a sigh. He hated ramps. There was only darkness on each side, and it began to curve down and around with nothing discernible beyond the squashed light of the lantern swaying above his head. And basically, knowing that a fall over the edge would never end. Stepper and the pack horse kept to the middle without any urging, and even Gaul avoided the brink. Worse, when the ramp ended on another island, There was no way to escape the conclusion that it lay directly beneath the one they had just left. And Gaul was glad to see... Or he was glad to see Gaul glancing upward, knowing that he's not the only one wondering what held the islands up and whether it was still sound. So, something I probably should refresh everyone on. I might not need to, but I will for those who need it. The darkness in the ways is so oppressive that even the lanterns that they carry are being basically their visibility's reduced. So it's kind of like immediately around them. Like, it's probably like 20 feet at most and probably closer to 10 feet from around the lantern. It's not a very big area. It's very difficult to see. And if you're looking off into the distance, even if they're like 50 feet behind Fael and company, it's going to be a very, very small, hardly there kind of lantern light. So it's not... It's a very oppressive place, and you can't see much of anything except what's immediately around you. So imagine walking in a basically pitch black with no idea where anything is, and you're basically using the lantern as a flashlight that can't go very far, and you basically don't know where anything is except for where your feet are going. So imagine like walking somewhere, and then all of a sudden it just ends on the edge of a bridge or something. That would be terrifying. But then Loyal and Fael's lanterns stopped at a guiding, so he reined up and didn't move, but then Fael's voice calls out for Perrin. And he looks at Gaul, and Gaul just shrugs. He hadn't spoken to Perrin since he, you know, spanked her. Perrin, come here. Not peremptory, but not asking either. Ben and Chiad were squatting easily beside the guiding, and Loyal and Fael sat on their horses. And Loyal had the pack horse's lead line, and his ear tufts twitched as though he looked from Fael to Perrin and back again. She seemed completely absorbed in adjusting her riding gloves, of soft green leather with golden falcons embroidered on their back. She had changed her dress, too. New one was cut in the same fashion, with a high neck and narrow divided skirts, but with a dark green brocaded silk, and somehow to emphasize her bosom. And Perrin hadn't seen the dress before. He asks what she wants, and she looks up surprised to see him. He's like, "Oh yes, I wanted to see if you could be taught to come when I call." And she smiled and smiled really deep. But it had because she had heard his teeth grinding. He scrubbed at his nose, and there's a faint, rank smell here. Bagal chuckled softly. "As well as try to understand the sun, Perrin. It simply is, and is not to be understood. You cannot live with it, but it exacts a price. So with women." And of course, Bane whispers in Chiad's ear, and they both laugh. And the way they looked at Gaul and him, Perrin probably didn't think they wanted, like, hearing what the woman found so funny, because Perrin heard it, and Gaul couldn't. And Loyal is feeling testy, because he's upset with Fael, and gives her an accusing look. And he's like, "It's not that at all. I'm sorry, Perrin. She insisted on being the one to call you. But we're here. That's why we called you. The Waygate at Manetherin." So Perrin nods. And doesn't say really anything, but he's not about to suggest that they follow the line. Not and have Fael call him down for trying to take over. He rubbed his nose again absently. There's almost an imperceptible scent of rankness, and it was irritating him. He wasn't going to make even the most sensible suggestion. "She wants to lead, let her." But she set her saddle, playing with her gloves, obviously waiting for him to speak so she could make some witty remark. She liked wittiness. He preferred saying what he meant. But irritably, he turned stepper, meaning to go on without her or Loyal. The line led to the waygate, and he could pick out the Avendisora leaf that opened it himself. Suddenly, he hears this muffled click of hooves from the darkness, and the fetid smell slammed home in his mind. "Trollocs!" he shouts. Gaul pivoted smoothly to slide a spear into a black-mailed chest of a wolf-snouted Trolloc, dashing into the light with a scythe-like sword upraised. In the same effortless motion, the Aiel pulled the spear point free and sidestepped to let the huge shape fall, and more came behind it. All goat snouts, boar's tusks, cruel beaks, twisted horns, with curved swords and spiked axes and hooked spears. The horses danced and screamed. But he's holding the pole lantern high. The thought of facing these things in the dark gave him a cold sweat. Perrin clawed for a weapon, swung at a face distorted by a sharp-toothed snout, and he was surprised to realize he had pulled the hammer free of its lashings in a saddlebag. But if he did not have the axe's sharp edge, 10 pounds of steel wielded by a blacksmith's arm sent the Trolloc staggering back, shrieking and clutching a ruined face. And I gotta say, that would definitely do it. 10 pounds of steel. Like, that's one block of steel. And not to mention his arm, as thick, as huge as it is, would cause a lot of problems. And we're about to see something really cool later on, but Loyal, you know, dashed his pole lantern against a goat horn head, and the lantern broke. Bathed in burning oil, he ran off howling in the dark. Well, that's a way to die. But the ogre flailed about him with the stout pole, a switch in his huge hands, but one that landed with sharp cracks of splintered bone. It's gonna hurt. One of Fael's knives blossomed in an all-too-human eye above a tusk snout, and the Aiel danced the spears, somehow finding time to veil themselves. Perrin just hit, and hit. A whirlwind of death that lasted, a minute, maybe five, but it seems like an hour. But suddenly all the Trollocs are down, and those not already dead kicking in their death throes. But Perrin breathes in deeply. His right arm felt like a weight of the hammer might pull it off. There was a burning sensation on his face, a wetness trickling down his side, and another on his leg, where Trolloc steel had gotten through. Each of the Aiel had at least one damp patch darkening their brown and gray clothes, and Loyal wore a bloody gash down his thigh. Perrin's eyes went right past them, looking for Fael, and concerned that she might be hurt, and not sure what he would do if she was. She sat atop her black mare, a knife in her hand, ready to throw. She had actually managed to pull off her gloves in time to tuck them neatly behind her belt, and he couldn't see a wound on her, and on all the blood smell, human, ogier, and Trolloc, he could not have picked out hers if she were bleeding, but he knew her scent, and she did not have the pained smell of injury. Bright lights hurt Trolloc eyes, and they did not adapt quickly. Very likely the only reason they were still alive and the Trolloc's dead was from abrupt entry from darkness into light. But that was all the time they had of a moment's respite. Enough to glance around and take a breath, but then, with a roar like 100 pounds of bone falling into a huge meat grinder, a fade leapt into the light, eyeless stare, a stare of death, black sword flickering like lightning. The horses screamed, trying to bolt. Gaul barely managed to turn the blade with his buckler, losing a slice from the side of it as if layers of curved, cured bull hide were only paper. He stabbed and eluded a thrust, barely, and stabbed again. Arrows sprouted into Myrtrol's chest as Bane and Chiad had thrust their spears through the harnesses holding their case bows on their backs. When they were using those curved horn bows. More arrows, pincushioning the halfman's chest. Gaul's spear darted, stabbed. One of Fael's knives suddenly stood out of the smooth maggot-white face, but the fade would not fall and would not stop trying to kill. Only the wildest dodging kept its sword from finding flesh. Perrin bared his teeth in an unconscious snarl. He hated Trollocs as an enemy of his blood, but the Neverborn? It was worth dying to kill a Neverborn. To put my teeth in its throat. Careless of whether he blocked Bane and Chiad's arrows, he guided Stepper closer to Neverborn's back, forcing the reluctant Dun nearer with reins and knees. At the last instant, the creature spun away from Gaul, seemingly ignoring a spear point thrust between its shoulders and come out below its throat, staring up at Perrin with the eyeless gaze that sent fear into every man's soul. Too late. Perrin's hammer fell, shattering head and eyeless gaze alike. Woo! Can you imagine that? Having a guy's head just explode from getting smacked by 10 pounds of steel with the force of being swung by a blacksmith arm. Woo! That would be... I'm surprised he didn't just go from his head all the way to his groin and completely just flatten it. Like, that's impressive. Imagine seeing that in a real-life situation. Woo! Be gruesome. But down and virtually headless, the Myrtrol still thrashed, lashing aimlessly with its Thakandar wrought blade. And if you recall Thakandar blades, because the Valley of Thakandar is outside of Sheol Gul, and The blades of Thakandar have a poison on them. And that poison, a slight nick can cause death. And it's very difficult for even Aes Sedai to heal. But he's still lashing out randomly, and Stepper danced back, and then Perrin felt as if he'd been doused in icy water, because the black steel made wounds even Aes Sedai found hard to heal. And he had ridden in uncaringly. He's like, my teeth, and it's, oh, I have to keep a hold of myself light. I have to. So he's almost got taken over by his more wolf-like senses. But he could hear smothering sounds from the darkness at the end of the island. The clatter of hoof feet, the scrape of boots, harsh breathing, guttural murmurs. Guess what? More Trollocs. But he doesn't know how many. Pity they hadn't been linked to the Murdrol, but it's probably all the ones that he already killed. Trollocs were usually cowards in their own way, but they might hesitate to attack if the Murdrol wasn't there to drive them away, because of their cowardly ways. But they prefer strong odds and easy kills, which, I mean, most soldiers would. But even lacking a Murdrol, they could work themselves up to come again eventually. He's like, all right, we gotta head to the Waygate. We gotta get out of here before they decide what to do with, you know, without that. Aiming with his bloody hammer at the flailing Fade. Fael turns Swallow around immediately, and he's surprised. He's like, you aren't going to argue? And he's like, not when you speak sense. Definitely not when you speak sense. Loyal? And Loyal, you know, took the lead on his tall, hairy fetlock mount, and they backed Stepper after Fael and Loyal with hammer in hand and the Aiel on his side with bows ready. The shuffling hooves and boots followed in the darkness. Now, this is a bit tricky, because Trollocs do well in nighttime, for the most part. It's usually specific ones excel, where other ones might not excel as much, but still better off than probably humans do. But this unnatural darkness, I don't know, because I don't think they're using any form of light, but they're crossing around, so they must have some special kind of advantage, if you will. But guess we'll never know that one either. It's just theory. But they're speaking in harsh mutters in a language too tough and rough for human tongues. And as they get closer, Perrin hears another sound, like silk sighing across silk. Its scent shivers along his bones, louder, a distant giant's exhalation rising, falling, rising higher. He's like, hurry, hurry. And Loyal's like, I am. That sound, the light illumine our souls and the creator's hand shelter us. It's opening. I must be last. Out. But not. No, Fael. Perrin risked a glance over his shoulder, and twin gates, apparently living leaves, were swinging open, revealing a smoked glass view of mountainous country. Loyal had dismounted to remove the Avendisora leaf to unlock the gate. And Fael had their pack animals leads and its huge mounts reins. With a hasty shout of, follow me, quickly, she booted Swallow's ribs, and the tyrant mare sprang forward to the opening. And Perrin told the Aiel, after her, quickly, you can't fight this. I'm having flashbacks, Lord of the Rings is like, go, swords are no more use here, during the Balrog initiation. But they hesitated for only a second, and then peeled back, and Gaul grabbed the pack horse's lead line, and Stepper came abreast of Loyal. He's like, can you lock it some way, like, keep it shut so it can't be blocked? And a frantic edge had entered the harsh mutterings. The Trollocs had recognized the sound too. Mach and Shin was coming, and living meant getting out of the ways. Loyal's like, yes, go now, go. Perrin reined Stepper back quickly towards the gate, and before he knew what he was doing, he had thrown back his head and howled, defiance and challenge. Foolish. But he kept his eyes on that pitch dark, backed Stepper into the way gate. The icy ripples slid across him hair by hair, and time stretched out. The jolt of leaving the ways hit him as if he had gone from a dead gallop to stop in one step. But the Aiel were still turning to face the way gate, spreading out across the slope with arrows knocked, aiming at the way gate from among low bushes and stunted mounted trees. He came galloping basically out of the way gate, but at a much slower pace than what Fael had. And Fael galloping out of the way gate was pretty much as bad as galloping in. She's lucky she didn't break her neck or her horse's. But Loyal's tall horse and her pack horse were trembling as though hit behind the eye, between the eyes. Perrin opened his mouth and she glared at him, daring him to make any comment at all. Maybe a sympathetic one, least of all. And he grimaced, but wisely kept silent. Then Loyal came hurtling out of the way gate, leaping out of a dull silvery mirror with his own reflection growing behind him, and rolled across the ground, almost on his heels. Two Trollocs appeared. Ram's horns and snout, eagle's beak and feathered crest, but before they were more than halfway out, the shimmering surface turned dead black, bubbling and bulging, clinging to them.
And this is the part I've been waiting for the whole time, is the voice of Machin Shin.
Voices whispered in Perrin's head, a thousand babbling, mad voices clawing at the inside of his skull.
Bitter blood, blood so bitter, drink the blood, crack the bone, suck the marrow. Bitter marrow, sweet the screams, singing screams, sing the screams, tiny souls, acrid souls, gobble them down. So sweet the pain.
And on and on. Sorry, I enjoy doing that way too much. It's the same as every time we come across Machin Shin, and it's a terrifying experience, to say the least. But shrieking and howling, the Trollocs beat at the blackness boiling around them, clawed to pull free as it sucked them deeper and deeper until one hairy hand remained, clutching frantically, then only darkness bulging outward, seeking. Slowly the way gates appeared, sliding together, squeezing the blackness so it oozed back inside between them. The voices in Perrin's head finally stopped. Loyal rushed forward quickly to place not one, but two three-lobed leaves among the myriad leaves and vines. The waygate became stone again, a section of a stone wall carved in intricate detail, standing alone on a sparsely wooded mountainside. Among the myriad leaves and vines was not one, but two Avendisora leaves. Loyal had replaced the trefoil leaf from the inside on the outside. Loyal heaved a deep, relieved sigh. He said, "That's the best I can do. It can only be opened from this side now." But he had an anxious and firm look towards Perrin. He's like, "I could have locked it forever by not replacing the leaves, but I will not ruin a waygate, Perrin. We grew the ways and intended them. Perhaps they can be cleansed someday. I cannot ruin a waygate," which I can kind of feel for him in that regard. Perrin just was like, "Yeah, it'll do." If the Trollocs had been coming through the waygate, or had there been a chance encounter, probably coming through the waygate is the most obvious thing, because Trollocs aren't just randomly wandering the ways. But then again, they can't read Ogier's script either, so I'm not sure how they exactly get through the ways. It's a bit of a weird conundrum that I'm not sure if we'll ever actually have the answers to. Fael's like, "Was that, And even the Aiel seemed a little shaken, at least one time. Loyal's like, "Machin Shin, the Black Wind, a creature of the shadow or a thing grown of the way's own taint. No one knows. I pity the Trollocs, even them." And Perrin was not sure he did. Not even dying like that. He had seen what Trollocs left when they got their hands on humans. Trollocs ate anything, so long as it was meat, and sometimes they liked to keep their meat alive while they butchered. He would not let himself pity the Trollocs. Stepper's hooves crunching on the dirt made Perrin turn to see where they were. Cloud-capped mountains all rose all around, and it was an ever-present clouds that gave them their name, the Mountains of Mist. The air was cool at this altitude, even in summer, especially compared to Tyr. The late afternoon sun sat on a western peaks, glinting on streams, running down to the river that coursed along the floor of the long valley below. The Manetherendrel, it was called once, had traveled out the mountains and much farther west and south, but Perrin had grown up calling the length of it that ran along the south edge of the two rivers the White River, an uncrossable stretch of rapids that churned its waters to froth. The Manetherendrel, waters of the mountain home.
Where bare rock showed in the valley below or the surrounding slopes, it glittered like glass. Once the city stood there, covering valley and mountains. Manethrin, city of soaring spires and splashing fountains, a capital of a great nation of the same name. Perhaps the most beautiful city in the world, according to the old Ogier tales. Gone now without a trace. Except for the all but indestructible waygate that had stood in the Ogier Grove. Burned to barren rock more than 2,000 years ago, while the Trolloc Wars still raged. Destroyed by the One Power after the death of its last king, Aemon Alcar Althorin, in his last bloody battle against the Shadow. Aemon's Field, men had named that place, where the village called Emmon's Field now stood. And that was a long time, long ago. And Trollocs had come since, on Winter's Night, more than a year gone. The night before, he and Rand and Matt were forced to flee in the darkness with Moraine. And it seemed long ago, but it could not happen again with the Waygate locked. It's White Cloaks I have to worry about, not Trollocs. A pair of white-winged hawks wheeled above the far end of the valley, and Perrin's eyes barely caught the streak of a rising arrow. One of the hawks cartwheeled and fell, and Perrin frowned. Why would anyone shoot a hawk up here in the mountains? Over a farm, if it was after the chickens or the geese, but up here? Why wouldn't anyone even be up here? Two River people avoided the mountains. And there's a question here, is who shot the arrow, but we're not sure quite in this chapter what exactly that would be. A second hawk swooped on its snowy wings towards where its mate had fallen, but suddenly it was climbing desperately. A black cloud of ravens burst from the trees, surrounding it in wild melee, and when they settled again, the hawk was gone. Perrin breathed. He had seen ravens and other birds attack a hawk that came up too close to their nest before, but he could not make himself believe it was this simple. The birds had burst up from where the arrow had risen. Ravens. The Shadow used animals as spies sometimes, rats and others that fed on death, usually. Ravens especially. He had sharp memories of running from the sweeping lines of ravens that had hunted him, and as though they had intelligence. But Fael's like, what you looking at? Those birds? He's like, yes, just birds. He's like, maybe they were, maybe they weren't. I can't frighten everybody until I'm sure, not while they're still shaky from Mach and Shin. He was still holding his bloody hammer, he realized, slick with black merdrawl blood. His fingers found drying blood on his cheek, matted in a short beard. So he hasn't grown his beard out like really, really big, just a short one. But he climbed down on his leg and it burned. But he found a shirt in his saddlebag to clean the hammer before the Fade's blood etched the metal. In a moment he would find out if there was anything to fear in these mountains. If it were more than men, the wolves would know. But Fael shows up and begins unbuttoning his coat. And he's like, what are you doing? She's like, tending your wounds. I'll not have you bleeding to death on me. That'd be just like you to die and leave me the work of burying you. You have no consideration. Hold still. But he quietly just says thank you. And she looks surprised. And she makes him a strip of everything but his small clothes so she could wash the wounds and rub them with the ointment. And he could not see the cut on his face, of course, but it seemed small and shallow. If uncomfortably close to his eye. The slash across his left side was over a hand long, though, straight along a rib, and the hole a spear had made in his right thigh was deep. Fael had to put stitches in that, with needle and thread from her sewing kit. He took it stoically. She was the one who winced every stitch. She muttered angrily under her breath the whole time she worked, especially while rubbing her dark, stinging cream into his cheek. Looking almost as if the hurts were hers and his fault. Yet she tied bandages around his ribs and his thighs with a gentle hand. It made a startling contrast, her soft touch and her furious grumbles. Definitely confusing. And when he put on a clean shirt and a pair of spare breeches from his saddlebags, she stood fingering the slice in the side of his coat. 2 inches to the right and he would not have left that island. Stamping his feet into his boots, he reached for his coat, and she flung it at him. You needn't think I'll sew that up for you. I've done all the sewing for you I mean to. You hear me, Perrin-Abar? And he's like, I didn't ask you. You didn't think of it, that's all. And just walks off, and he's just more confused. She heads over to the Aiel to help tend them and Loyal.
It is an odd group. The Ogier with his baggy breeches off, Gaul and Chiad eyeing each other like strange cats, and Fael spreading her ointment and wrapping bandages, and all the while shooting accusing glares at him. What was he supposed to have done now? But he shakes his head, and Gaul's right. As well as try to understand the sun. Which, it's obviously the running joke of the series. But he knew what he had to do now, especially after what happened in the ways of the Fade. And once he had seen a man who had forgotten he was human, the same could happen to him. He's like, fool, you just have to hold on for a couple more days, just until you find the White Cloaks. And he had to know. Those ravens. He sent his mind questing across the valley for wolves, and there were always wolves where men were not, and if they were close, he could talk to them. Wolves avoided men, ignoring them as much as possible, but they hated Trollocs for unnatural things and despised Murdraw with hatred too deep to hold. If Shadowspawn were in the Mountains of Mist, wolves could tell them. But he found no wolves. None. Not a single one. They should have been there in this wilderness. He could see deer browsing down in the valley. Maybe it was just that wolves were not close enough. They could talk over some distance, but even a mile was too far. Maybe it was less in mountains. That could be it. His gaze swept across the cloud-capped peaks and settled on the valley's far end where the ravens had come from. Maybe he'd find the wolves tomorrow, but he didn't want to think of the alternatives. And that's the end of the chapter. So, what did you guys think? It's a couple intense moments, obviously. The oppressive darkness. The Trollocs coming out of nowhere and basically knowing that they're there a split second before they show up. The Murdraw almost getting them. And then obviously Mach and Shin showing up and causing chaos, and literally Loyal comes out of the way gate, and that's when Mach and Shin hits. If I was Loyal, I'd have a hard time standing for a while. adrenaline pumping through my body. Like, oh my gosh, I almost died. My soul was gone. That would have been bad. Been really, really bad. But needless to say, it was rough. Fael's behavior is erratic as usual. But yeah. What did you guys think? We got a nice little description of the place where Manethron would have been. Its description is a bit strange, almost like it's encompassing the mountains. It's not really a given, exactly how much space it took. So it could have gone completely over the mountain from the other side. It could be up against the mountain, but the way it's worded makes it seem like it's across it, because it says on the mountain, not against the mountain. So I don't know. Maybe it might have been just a slip of the pen, so to speak, or the pencil, and he meant to say against, but it ended up saying on. I don't know. But there's this. It was a big city. Let's put it that way. It was a mega city. It was definitely a metropolis. It was a. Did I say metropolis? Metropolis is what I meant to say. Wow. It was a metropolis. The city itself was named after the same of the nation. And then obviously Amonsfield becomes Emmonsfield, and that's where the Two Rivers is now. So there's a lot of really cool kind of lore based stuff in the area. So hopefully that is all stuff you enjoyed. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, or whatever, feel free to reach out. You can reach out on Facebook, Tales of a Red Arm on Facebook, or at Tales of a Red Arm on Twitter/X. You can also reach out to me directly through my email, which is talesofaredarm@gmail.com. If you have any things you want to comment on or whatever, just let me know. I'd love to hear from you guys. You can also join the Discord if you'd like. And the Discord is access through both Facebook and Twitter/X. If you can't get that to work or can't find it or whatever, you can reach out to me through email, talesofroadarmor@gmail.com, and I will get you a link so you can join the server and Discord, and we can have fun talking, chatting about everything. You can go into a spoiler-free area and a spoilers area, depending on if you're a veteran of the series or if you're a new person and you want to learn a little bit about a bit of everything. So, but yeah, would love to hear what you guys think. We got chapter 28 coming up next, and it's gonna be a bit interesting, I think. But yeah, we'll go from there. So, thanks everybody for hanging out. Look forward to the following episode and hope to see you there. Until then.
We drink all night and dance all day, and on the girls we'll spend our pay, and when we're done then we'll away to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll toss the dice however they fall, and snuggle the girls, be they short or tall, and follow young Matt wherever he calls, to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll toss the dice however they fall, and snuggle the girls, be they short or tall, then follow Lord Matt wherever he calls, to dance with Jack of the Shadows. We'll give a yell with a bloody curse, and hog the maids, it could be worse, as we ride away with the dark ones first, to dance with Jack of the Shadows. Yeah!